You're listening to Wisconsin Today. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Now it's time for Wisconsin Life. Here's producer Maureen McCollum with a story about staying connected with a loved one who has passed.
Have you ever picked up a hobby because a friend or a relative was really into it? Try to see if they're truly onto something? Writer Yael Laura Vauclair did this with geocaching, an outdoor activity her late sister, Jurlore, loved to do with her kids.
My sister Zao was an epic geocacher. She wasn't afraid of getting lost in fields, climbing through brush, or being greeted by spiders. Well, maybe she was a little, but she still went. Geocaching is an outdoor treasure hunting activity where hiders and seekers come to play. Seekers, like my sister, use GPS-enabled devices to locate hidden containers called geocaches that include a logbook and sometimes trinkets to swap. In the Eau Claire area alone, there are almost 900 hidden treasures. I've added geocaching to my list of things to do when I miss my sister. This was one of her favorite hobbies with the kids in her life, and though she'd asked me to tag along, I never did. There was something about needing to go off trail at times, or searching aimlessly while strangers walked by, that made me feel uneasy. My sister wasn't shy, though. She was all about finding the treasure. One afternoon, my nieces asked if we could go to the park. We hadn't ventured out much since my sister died, and this seemed like an easy enough feat to accomplish. When we arrived, one of my nieces said, "There's a geocache here." Before I knew it, she was holding a canister that somehow magically appeared from the pines. The kids dug through for which trinket they wanted to keep while I scanned the logbook. Then, my eyes landed on my sister's name, Zao. I glanced up at the towering pines, maples, and oaks. They likely greeted my sister too when she was here. I took a picture of her signature to create a stamp so she could go into every logbook I found from then on. The first time I went geocaching by myself was after it had rained. The ground was muddy and mosquitoes were out in full force. I was not prepared in my shorts, t-shirt, and flip-flops, but I was missing my sister and felt the urge to go. The geocaching app showed several treasures along the trails in my neighborhood. After parking, I navigated to the closest geocache, but struggled to find it amongst the fallen branches. After the 10th mosquito bite, I moved along to the trails. As I got closer to the next geocache, I realized that it was hidden off-trail. There I stood, staring into the woods, swatting at the buzzing by my ear, and debating with my sister. "You want me to go in there?" I said. "There's not even a way in." Just like Zo would have done, though, I paved my own path. I moved branches out of my way and crawled alongside a moss-covered log in search of a geocache called the Naughty Potty Gnome. My sister would have loved that. After almost losing one of my flip-flops twice and my hair full of webs, I reached the end of the fallen log, where I was greeted by a gnome sitting on a toilet. On the bottom of the sculpture, I unscrewed a tube to find the logbook and stamped my sister's name. Together, we had found our first treasure. It didn't surprise me when Zao took the old pill bottles from my recycling bin and turned them into geocaches. She delivered them one day, suggesting I hide them. Instead, I put them inside a cupboard and forgot. After she passed away, I found them while cleaning. Zao had created over 20 geocaches filled with logbooks and trinkets. I opened each one, stamped her name into the logbook, and thought of all the places my sister and I could hide them.
Writer Yael Laura Vauclair brought us that story on her sister and geocaching. Wisconsin Life is a co-production of Wisconsin Public Radio and PBS Wisconsin. Additional support comes from Lowell and Mary Peterson of Appleton. Find more Wisconsin Life at wisconsinlife.org and on Facebook and Instagram. I'm Maureen McCollum. Thank you.
It's Wisconsin Today. Just observing a Wisconsin wetland with your binoculars in hand, it might be hard to tell how the insects that live there lead a very complicated life in their ecosystem. A UW-Madison graduate student has spent a lot of time in these special places that provide a rich habitat for wildlife, and she has a growing body of evidence of insect interactions. Anne Marsh has been studying wetland insects for over two decades. She categorized insects that show parental love by burying dead rodents and flies that inject eggs into their prey's stomachs. She studies a group called staphylinids, which are composting bugs. Her talk at the upcoming Wisconsin Insect Fest is titled Sex, Violence, and Deception, The Hidden World of Wetland Insects. Anne, welcome to Wisconsin Today.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
Why do wetland insects deserve such a rollicking and hell-raising description in the title of your presentation?
So insects have evolved to be in very specific niches in ecology. And these particular insects have evolved to be in acidic wetland areas. And so you won't typically find them in too many places.
Can you talk more about this family of beetles and what their days are like?
So this particular family of beetles is huge. It has over 66,000 species. So I actually study two subfamilies. And so that consists of taking that 66,000 group family and taking it down to 94.
Oh, that's more manageable.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And so these particular insects are found in the wetlands, and they feed on that debris and old logs and things like that that you find on the edges of, like, swamps and river beds and things like that. So I do my research in river bottoms, which is a real swampy kind of area, also bogs. Which is also swampy, and we find them in red rot wood, which is when the tree has fallen down and it's really, like, soft and you can break it open really easily. And inside there, the wood is usually red. That's where it gets the name red rot.
Why is it so interesting to you to study these beetles?
Well, mostly because of the ecological niche, which I just described, and then also because these are the good guys. These are the composters. And so if we didn't have them, we would be covered in, like, you know, leaf litter, and, you know, they take care, they compost down that leaf litter in the fall. So the ones that I find in early spring are usually in that moldy leaf litter that's been sitting there all winter. And so we need them.
And they're really good at composting?
Yes. Yes. Mm. That's their whole ecological niche.
In your research, you found the burying beetle. What should we know about this type of beetle?
So that particular group is really interesting because that is one of the few beetle groups that actually have, like, a nurturing they kind of raise their eggs as a family. And so there's two different subgroups of those as well. One of them I find a lot. And these are the ones that take care of, like, dead mice and small rodents and things like that. So what they do is they find one of these, and then this is, like, premium nutrition for a lot of different insects. So they have to hide it. And so what they do when they find it, they hide it. And so what they do is they take the mouse and they dehair it, and then they bury it. And then they lay their eggs on that. That's what the whole family feeds on, the male, female, and the larva. And then when the larva grows up, then it comes out of the ground and continues on with the next.
Wow. They have their whole feeding ground, literally.
Yes. It's all hidden underground.
Wow. And so this type of parental care is unusual that you haven't seen in other beetles?
That's correct. Usually they lay the eggs and then leave.
Hmm. So when you talk about focusing on taxonomy and systematics, you know, you're really concerned about classifying the diversity of life. This is your second calling, from what I understand. You had a career in sales. What prompted you to get into this?
So I had a 26-year career in, I was a district sales manager and a recruiter trainer. I have been all over the world opening stores and training staff and things like that for three different companies. And in 1999, my husband and I bought a house. We lived in Florida. We bought a house from an elderly woman. And so it was a typical two-bedroom, three-bath house. And she was living in one bathroom and one bedroom. So when I was, what we think happened is when we were cleaning out like the cobwebs and things like that in one of the rooms, a brown recluse spider got in under my pants and bit me in the side of the ankle. And it was a two-year recovery. I almost lost my leg.
Wow.
And because of that, I couldn't do my job. I couldn't stand. I couldn't drive. I couldn't do much of anything. And so I decided that I wanted to go back to school. And at the same time, I didn't want to negate that 26 years of retail that I had. So I started down the path of pre-pharmacy. And in my first biology class, we had to dissect a locust. And I thought that was the coolest thing I ever saw. And that sent me down the path of insects.
And you haven't turned back. You're still with your insects.
Yes.
What does it feel like for you to go out into a bog or a marsh or to go into the field knowing that there are lots of different critters out there, you know, having gone through the experience of that spider bite?
You know, it doesn't bother me really. I figure that's like the worst of the worst of could have happened. Brown recluse spiders typically don't live here in Wisconsin, and if they do, they don't have venom that's that potent. So, yeah, now I know, like, you know, to wear nets over my face, and I usually take like duct tape and wrap up my pants legs and things so nothing can crawl up my pants anymore. But yeah, it's like you're on a mission, and the mission is to get out there and see, you know, the beetles that are in those areas.
When you're out there, you wave your hand and you can see a wave of insects. Can you talk about just how thick the insects can get?
So remember that, you know, I'm talking about bogs, marshes, river bottoms, things like that. And these have lots and lots and lots of mosquitoes. And there's been times, as you described, that I can go like this and see like a ribbon, a wave ribbon of like a break in the mosquitoes. And in order to deal with that, I do have to take prescription medication during the summer so that I can sleep at night because I get so many mosquito bites.
Wow. Ann Marsh is with us as we talk about Wisconsin's wetland insects. She is a taxonomist and systematicist and graduate student at UW-Madison studying a group of insects called
Staphylinidae.
Staphylinidae. Thank you. She's a speaker at the Wisconsin Insect Fest, which takes place in Madison on August 1st. Your talk has the word sex in it.
Yes.
We haven't gotten to that topic yet, I don't think. So what can you tell us there?
So in there, I talk about different fly species and things like that. And one of them is the bricassid. And that particular one is interesting because what it does is in order to entice a mate, it actually makes like a little gift. So it might take like a gnat or something like that, and it wraps it up into like a little package. And so the male will stand there and until the female comes by to see what's in the package. And so while she's opening up the package, he's mating with her. But the deal is sometimes he'll trick her and just make like an empty package. And then she won't even know that until after the mating is done.
And she will not have to be able, she won't be able to post that on social media anywhere.
No.
No. Okay. All right. Next word, violence. What do we got there?
I talk about the canopid fly, which is the thick-headed fly. That's also really interesting because there's two groups of those as well, and they parasitize hornets. And they do it in two different ways. One of them has an abdomen that's shaped like a can opener. And so the female will literally go up to the hornet, pry open its abdomen, and shoot an egg in there. And then, of course, the egg, when it hatches, the larva will start feeding on that hornet. And kind of like makes it into a zombie. So it kind of like lays on the forest floor. And then as it grows, it will eat that until it's completely gone. Mm. The other group of the canopid fly has like a harpoon. And so what that does is it goes up to the hornet and literally like shoots the egg into the abdomen like a harpoon.
Well, Anne, thank you so much for sharing your research. Thank you for your time.
Well, thank you for having me.
Anne Marsh is a taxonomist and systematicist at UW-Madison studying a group of insects. They're called staphylinids, and she will present at the Wisconsin Insect Fest taking place in Madison on August 1st.